I added one more podcast to the giant podcast bin. Now you have plucked that podcast out and started listening.
I took my microphone and found some human folk. Then I recorded all the noises while we spoke.
My name is Adam Buxton, I'm a man.
I want you to enjoy this, that's the plan.
How are you doing, podcats? Adam Buxton here. Just out taking my exercise break with my dog friend. I am allowed to leave the castle for exercise as long as there are no people. There's no one out here.
I ain't seen anybody except my wife.
My wife.
My kids and my dog friend for about a week now.
Maybe a bit more than a week, in fact. Actually, though, that's not true. I saw Tracy, the post woman, post person, post operative. No, that's not right. Tracy, who delivers the mail. I saw her from a distance, but she waved. It was nice to see her. But listen, I hope you're physically well, or not too bad anyway, and mentally coping with lockdown life. This techno bird. Actually, there's several techno birds. Oh, it's nice to see them. It's cold out here. Rosie's up ahead. She doesn't care. She's got her thick coat on. She's having a nice bounce. But it is very parky. It's not... Last week it was all sort of weird and summery and balmy almost. Now it's got pretty bitey. It was snowing here yesterday. Buckle's family are all okay, as far as I'm aware. However, I am unhelpfully hyper aware of every single thing my body's doing from moment to moment. I imagine I'm not the only one. Oh, I've got an ache. What's the ache? Is it a normal ache or a feverish ache? Oh, I've got a bit of a pain when I breathe in there. Oh, have I? Or is that normal? Oh dear, is that a normal cough? Or is it a dry cough? I don't know. Mind you, I am normally like that anyway. What else have I been doing to keep myself occupied apart from eating? I'll tell you what I've been doing. I've been listening to Tim Key's late night poetry program on the BBC Sounds app. So good thing number one, which it took me a while to get hold of, was the BBC Sounds app, which is sort of an iPlayer for your listening device or phone or whatever. It enables you to stream or download programs from the BBC archives, so you can go pretty far back. You can do searches for people you're interested in. I did a good Grayson Perry search and found lots of good programs that he'd been in. And I did a Tim Key search and realized that I'd never actually heard his program, Late Night Poetry program, which he's been doing for years now. I think it's series 5 that's currently going out, third episode this week, Wednesday evening, 9 p.m, Radio 4. And if you haven't heard it, like the earlier episodes were 15 minutes, and he would do more poems in those. I don't think he's doing too many actual poems in the more recent episodes. It's a difficult one to describe, especially if you don't know Tim Key's stuff. It's got Tim Key in it. He plays a kind of psychotic version of himself, and Tom Basden is in it, and he also plays a weird version of himself. Katie Wicks is in it, although she plays a character. Lots of good people in it. It's a sitcom, I suppose, in that each episode is some sort of situation, but really the thing is the actual words and the way they are delivered is just very funny and weird. We actually sat down and listened to a couple of episodes with the whole family at the dinner table. It felt like the 40s or something.
Family sat round the gramophone, listening to a comedy radiogram, and then watching the Prime Minister's speech about the lockdown.
Anyway, look, let me tell you about podcast episode 117, which features a rambling conversation with actor and writer Daisy Haggard. You will have seen Daisy on TV, mainly in comedic roles, on shows like Man Stroke Woman, Green Wing, Episodes with Matt LeBlanc, and more recently, Breeders on Sky One with Martin Freeman. Haven't seen that yet. Last year, 2019, Daisy starred in the brilliant BBC comedy drama Back to Life, playing Miri Mattison, a woman returning home after 18 years in prison. The show was also written by Daisy, along with comedian Laura Solon. My conversation with Daisy was recorded using an audio-only link via Skype. Though, if there are any tech nerds listening, I should point out that I didn't actually record the Skype feed. Instead, I recorded using my mic this end, and Daisy used a separate digital recorder her end, and then sent me the file. Okay. I spoke with Daisy a few days before the UK went into its current state of lockdown. That's why Daisy refers to her builder friend Dave coming round to do a job for an elderly neighbour. When we first started speaking, she had to go and let Dave in. Not something she would be doing now unless Dave was standing a long way away wearing a plastic suit with a broom held at arm's length to ensure that he was always 2 metres away. It was very nice to speak to Daisy, who, as you will hear, I have known for a while, since we worked together on a legendary sitcom that we spoke about towards the end, and then we just talked a load of nonsense before that. Back at the end to say goodbye, but right now, with Daisy Haggard, here we go. How are you feeling, though, Daisy? Are you someone that looks on the bright side in these situations, or do you get very easily depressed?
I mean, no, I'm definitely a bright sider, but I mean, this is a big shell shock one, isn't it? And we're only at the beginning of it. You know, this is the very, 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 very beginning. Hence the fact that Dave the Builder still is able to go through the back door and get himself a cup of tea with the bleach spray. Yeah, hello there. He's not been in that back door, Adam. No one's going in there.
You made that much more explicit. That was my fault.
I will always make things explicit if I'm given a tiny, tiny chance. But no, I am. We're only at the very beginning of it. So I sort of spent the last week feeling a bit shell-shocked and trying to sort of pull things together to try and make the house work for two children under five. And then I am just desperate to try and see the positive in anything positive we can see, because there will be a lot of negative and a lot of sadness. So, yeah, I think I'm determinedly going to be optimistic about how we deal with it. And
well,
let's see
good.
How long I last. I've got some wine, so that will help. Not now, because it's 10, 11.
But, yeah.
But generally.
Yeah, wait till midday.
Yeah, what time is it appropriate to start drinking?
What time is it appropriate to start drinking in pandemic times? That's a good question.
I think, is it airport rules? Is it airports and Christmas rules? That is my question. Or will we all just go completely mad if we do that?
Do you think Christmas rules are the same as airport rules?
Well, actually, no. I have to say airport rules are, I think, maybe a bit different to Christmas rules. Airport rules, I will be like, oh, I'll have a Bloody Mary. I don't care what time it is.
What, like if you go and you get an early morning flight somewhere?
Oh, actually, no, I don't think I could do it that early.
Okay.
But if I was child-free on a plane, I don't know. I think I've been known to feel like airport rules. Well, you know, the country I'm going to, it's midnight, so I can have a drink.
Right.
Just because it's quite fun, isn't it? And I'm not going to be able to for the next year, so we're fine.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, this is another thing. You've got to stop me from kind of dragging everything toward a kind of depressing, negative place. But one of the things that it's hard to ignore is the whole issue of climate change with this situation. You know, one of the reasons that the pandemic was able to take hold and the virus was able to spread was because of the ease of travel that we have nowadays and the international travel there is. And also the extent to which there is so much unnecessary travel.
Yeah.
People just take it for granted, like, yeah, fuck it, we've got a stag weekend, we're all going to get on a plane. And, you know, the weird thing about the climate change situation is that it's unfolding so slowly. But actually, it's really no less of an emergency, you know, if you pull back and look at it in widescreen.
Yeah.
And we sort of need to respond to it with as much urgency as we are to this, in a way.
Well, I mean, this is sort of responding to it, isn't it? Isn't that the one thing that we can sort of hope for? Is that, like, when I lay awake last night, sort of panicking about if I'd have to remortgage our house to try and get, you know, because all the jobs are cancelled for the foreseeable, I then was like, oh, what am I going to think if I'm lying awake at night at the moment worrying? And I thought, I'm just going to imagine those fish back in the canals in Venice. And I'm going to just imagine the fact that the earth is getting that she's having a little breather.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that there are no planes in the sky. And I'm just going to sort of try and focus on that.
Yes.
And I can't.
And I mean, you would hope the takeaway would be that people would realise at the end of this that actually there's a lot we can do without. And there's a lot that's more important.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think more likely and more depressingly that the possibility is that people will just snap back to their old routines as soon as they possibly can, you know.
I don't know. I mean, yes, but I feel like it will fundamentally, hopefully change some things.
Am I right in saying that your dad was or is your dad still with us?
Yes, he is still with us.
And he is someone that worries a lot about the environment.
He is obsessively worried about the environment. And so, I remember like bringing a boy back on a date and my, on a date. Why would you bring a boy on a date to your parents' house? Introducing a boy to my mum and dad. And I sort of let myself in and my mum had the hose pipe in the bath upstairs and my dad was sucking the hose pipe.
What?
And siphoning the bathwater onto the flower beds.
Oh.
which was a lovely way to introduce him. And he was like, hello, darling. And I remember being like, oh my God, that's so embarrassing. But actually, they're brilliant. I mean, I almost feel like they're like, you know, we have some old tins of sardines. They're 20 years old. They'll get us through. They've always been, my parents have kind of part of, I think, one of the key forces of love and bonding in their relationship is their resourcefulness and their desire to not be wasteful. And they really sort of get a kick out of that together.
So, yeah. And they passed that on to you, did they? Or did you resist it?
They did. But I think occasionally I went really far the other way because, you know, we weren't allowed any, you know, we weren't allowed plastic toys or, I mean, we were allowed plastic toys, but it was more like if you can get something from the jumble sale for 20p, then go for it. But otherwise make your own. So I'm definitely not that. I'm not as good as they are about all those things. But I'm hoping this will kick it in a bit better.
Yeah, because the waste involved with having children. Oh, my God, I'm sounding like such an old fart man. But it is true. I mean, it is chronic.
No, it is.
When they have birthday parties and stuff like that, and you see the amount of fucking useless dog shit that gets trucked in to amuse the five-year-olds for, you know, 30 minutes on their birthday. And so when they would blaze through all these plastic toys and bits of junk and stuff, I wouldn't throw them away. I would keep them all in a big box in the shed. And I was thinking exactly that. One day I'm going to go and create a big sculpture out of the, like, like all these plastic, maybe I'll arrange them all according to the colors, and it will be a kind of comment on our consumer society as well as being a beautiful object. And then my wife came in and said, what the fuck are you hoarding all these things in these boxes for? I was like, well, because one day I'm going to do a sculpture. And she poured a lot of scorn on the idea, and then eventually...
Is it still there?
No.
Oh, because you could be doing that now.
I could be doing that now. And I also had big boxes of like empty toilet rolls. I've still got those. So there might be some...
They might be useful just for wiping your ass.
Yes, I hasten to add that I was not stockpiling the toilet roll. The thing is that we already sort of were stockpilers. So our technique was go to the supermarket, not very often, but get big loads while we're there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think I got a few dirty looks from people the last time I did it. Although I haven't been to the supermarket in the last couple of weeks. But even the last time I went, I think some people were looking at me thinking, what's he doing? Stockpiling Diet Pepsis.
I looked mad the other day. I dropped off my daughter and I had a box in the buggy filled with tins. And I hadn't like brushed my hair and I was pretty much wearing my pajamas, which is my usual sexy look around my parts. And I was actually going to take that box to the food bank.
Yes.
But I didn't look like I was. So I just was, I had just anyone that looked at me, I was like, food bank, like a sort of weird Tourette twitch, because I was so aware that I looked like
a hoarder,
you know, a completely crazy woman pushing boxes of tins in a buggy instead of a child. But I was doing the right thing. But yeah, no, I'm somebody who is sort of renowned for my friends as having a theory that my house should always be ready for a house party at any time.
Okay.
Or, you know, to be able to feed people if they come round. So I do, I've always had supplies because I've always wanted to be ready for fun at any moment. And there's always been too much wine or too much, you know. So I'm in this position. But then I'm, but I think my friends will be like, hey, Daisy, have you got a bottle of red? And I'll be like, yeah, go on.
Yeah.
I'll bleach it. I'll bleach it and leave it outside.
I like that. You're a fun prepper.
Yeah, I'm a fun prepper. So what I have, we were laughing at what we have because it's what we've had always. It's just an awful lot of various strange alcohols. And me and my brother were chatting the other day about at what point do you go for that weird thing that someone, that weird alcohol that you have no idea what it is.
Uh-huh.
The one that's at the back of the shelf.
Limoncello or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I've got crisps and...
You got Twiglets.
I've got two packets of Twiglets and a lot of wine.
You're going to need more than two packets of Twiglets.
I know, especially as my daughter suddenly decided she likes them.
Oh, very sophisticated.
I know.
Your dad, though, was the inspiration for the character of the dad in your show, right? Back to Life.
Yes, he was. I mean, and obviously my mother was not the inspiration for my mother in the show, just so to make that clear.
Why do you say that? For people who haven't seen the show, describe the mother in Back to Life.
Because one of the first times you see her, she is hand-pleasuring my ex-boyfriend, and my mother has never done that, as far as I know. So just to make that clear. But yeah, my dad, when I was pregnant with Elsie, I was staying there, you know, and I was really grumpy anyway because I was pregnant and feeling really rotten. And just him coming in and going, so darling, when you load a dishwasher, it's very important that you rinse, and then you know, place the plate into the dishwasher. And I'd just be staring at him and thinking, oh my God, I'm 35, I've survived, I've done all right. Like, please, please, can we stop this? But then all of that stuff got used, so it was really useful.
Yeah.
Living at home, having to sort of handle those kind of things. I fed into the show.
Mm. And you're doing another series, right?
Yes, so I'm trying to write the second series at the moment, which is why I think I was so frantically building Wendy Houses, because I've got to write a few more episodes with two children at home and everyone at home. So that's going to be interesting.
Oh, mate.
But yeah, fingers crossed it will all stay on track and it will happen. But, you know,
I really hope so. I enjoyed it so much, Daisy. I thought it was great. And I couldn't help feeling as well like, wow, good on you. You stuck in there because you've always been very busy and you've kept working consistently as long as I've known you, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
But I always felt like a lot of people from our, well, I include myself in your generation, even though I'm probably quite a bit older than you. But because you and I worked together for a while, I feel as if you're one of my contemporaries. And
yeah,
it's so difficult to get those kinds of projects off the ground. You know, there's so many of us who are always trying to write a sitcom of one kind or another. I don't think I ever will again. I think my those days are behind me. But I was so impressed that, like, fucking hell, man, you did it. You got it together.
Oh, thank you. Well, it was, yeah, I mean, I didn't think I would. You know, as I said, I think I was pushing Elsie around the park, just walking around in circles with a buggy going, oh, well, that's it then. And so it was amazing. So that when, so two brothers kind of backed an idea. So we sort of talked about writing something, doing something. I pitched the idea and then we developed it really slowly, really. But we developed it really carefully. And then they shot a taster. So it all happened really slowly over 5 years, really. But mm-hmm. then suddenly it happened. And I couldn't quite believe it because I thought, oh, this isn't going to happen. But it's like a sort of side project that I'm, you know, working on while I'm trying to deal with a young baby and becoming a mum for the first time. And so it was an amazing thing that to actually suddenly go, oh, my God, we're filming it. And there's that moment where you're doing something and you've written something. You've thought, oh, I'll just write that in. I'll just write a scene where a brick goes through a window. And then suddenly you're doing it and you're like, oh. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, you took that seriously. Oh, people are letting me do, you know, that weird thing of going, oh, God. Mm. Oh, I didn't even know we kept that in. Oh, my God, it's happening. There's a stunt woman. Oh, shit. It was amazing.
And if people are listening to this and they didn't see it for whatever reason, can you do us the elevator pitch?
So Back to Life is a show about a woman returning home from 18 years in prison for a crime that we don't quite know we don't know what she did. But she's moving back to the small town where she did the thing and living with a family who are affected by the whole experience. And it's a comedy, although you wouldn't know from the description. It is a dark, darkly comic, mysterious, silly show. Does
yeah.
that sound right, Adam?
Yeah, man.
And so, it's on iPlayer still.
And it's on iPlayer.
Yeah, have a watch. We're all going to have time, aren't we?
Yeah, there you go. And it's quite a frankly sexy show. It has moments where you think, even in today's more permissive climate, I found myself thinking, whoa, that's quite, I haven't, ooh.
Oh, that's so funny. I think of it as not a sexy show, but I suppose I've made them, Geraldine, do all the sexy, haven't I?
Yeah, there's some good old person sex.
Yeah, there's old. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you ever had to do anything sexy on camera?
Yes, I have. I find it very awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah, I find it very awkward. I had to do, when we did Man Straight Women, I had to quite often kiss Nick Burns. And I think every outtake was just me laughing absolutely hysterically into his mouth. So I'd start off and then I would just get completely hysterical.
Yeah.
I just couldn't take it seriously. So yeah, no, I'm not a fan of doing that. Have you ever had to do that?
I had to do it once, I think. No, I am sure. I once had to kiss someone for, in fact, you know what it was for? It was for the pilot of a little show that became The Persuasionists.
Oh, you had to do kissing.
Yeah, it was for one of two pilots that were made when the show was called The Scum Also Rises. And this is a show, if you're not a regular listener, that myself and Daisy were involved with. I think 2009 we filmed it eventually. But they started doing pilots maybe 2007, 2008 or something like that. And one of them, I had to kiss someone in a very sort of stupid way. It was supposed to be like over the top, but still like, you know, with tongues and everything. But we were falling around and falling on the floor. And so it was comical. But still, there was actual physical face contact.
I remember now.
Were you there for that one?
I mean, I wasn't in the room.
Right.
But I remember now that, because I think I did both pilots, didn't I? Yes,
yeah.
I did both pilots. I remember. And how did you feel about that?
I felt really, really weird.
Really nervous?
Nervous. I mean, the thing is, it's weird because, you know, I like kissing people.
Mm. Yeah, me too. But it's a very unerotic experience in that situation.
Yeah. But the thing is, the actual, because I've never really done that before, you know, it's hard to, the first time you do it on camera, it's half of your brain is just thinking, well, I'm just kissing someone. And yeah. So that's nice, is it? But then the other half of your brain is thinking, no, you're not kissing someone, you're pretending to. And you're not kissing them because they want to kiss you. You're kissing them because we're pretending and it's being filmed for a shit TV show. But but it's a really odd thing. And I found myself quite embarrassed and quite worried about what the person I was kissing was thinking. And was she thinking that I was kissing her the right way, or was I doing it inappropriately, or was there a special way that you're supposed to fake a kiss? And no one had been through any of that with me, you know, so it was very uncomfortable. And I was quite freaked out afterwards because I felt like the actor that I was kissing was also a little bit freaked out.
I think the whole thing is really weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very odd.
Especially if you're not someone that does it all the time. You know, I have friends who are so, they're so used to it. In fact, my husband, when he was acting, I'm like pretty much guaranteed if there's like a part with a sex scene, he'll get it. So he's like, oh, what you do with, you know, he's kind of like an old hand.
Okay.
Which I find really weird. But I, he's kind of like, he's just experienced at having to do it. I'm literally not. So I've had a few kind of comedies where you do like a kiss or something is different. But if you're doing something proper, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I would not want to do that.
I think it's really weird. And I don't like it. I'm going to sound maybe prudish now, but I don't like to see people taking their clothes off and doing sex scenes, mainly. Because I just think, like, what's the point here? Because generally it's not very moving. It's supposed to be titillating. But then you think, like, well, it's not properly. I'm sat here watching this with my wife and the dog on my lap, you know, like, well, it's not going to get that sexy, is it? And also, you know, in an obvious way, the vast majority of those scenes feature women having to get undressed and not men. And I always just think, oh, that's a shame.
That's not fair.
Why does she have to get her top off or take her pants off? You know, and the bloke just very seldom does.
Yeah. It's so unfair, isn't it?
It really
I've managed to avoid that with my comedy career.
Right.
Thank God.
Would you do it if the art demanded it?
No, I'm actually quite, I'm not, I just don't really want to do that.
And what's the favourite thing you've done in the last few, because Persuasions, that was over 10 years ago now. So what's the favourite thing that you've done in the meantime?
Oh, we really love doing episodes. That was really good fun.
Oh, yeah.
That was just sort of just a really fun gang, and we kind of kept going back. So it was sort of spanned over 10 years.
Did you get to do anything in the States for that?
We went to the States and I did one day, but I got to go and I have this sort of, and I hadn't really done LA at all. And I had this very funny sort of like 3 days in LA where I managed to just be so on LA. I think I, like, the first thing I did is I had to go meet an agent, and I tripped over I wore flip-flops to go and see an agent, and tripped over them into this incredibly long, glamorous room where all these agents were sitting, and fell like flat on my face.
Yes.
And then I stood up and said, I'm from England, which basically became my thing, because I just kept getting things wrong. Like, it was really funny. I just felt very socially awkward there. And this is all like 10 years ago. I'm obviously very slick now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I went and did that. And then I went to a casting and I was really nervous and I'm terrible at learning lines. And I did this casting quite badly. And this really amazing casting director who'd done loads of things. And at the end, and I was sort of really high and sort of nervous and jumpy. And at the end, she said, oh, your dress is undone. And my whole dress was undone right to down to the waist.
Oh, back?
Yeah, at the back, yeah. And I panicked and I said, oh, I thought we were going to fuck as a joke. Because I don't know why. I wouldn't normally make such a sort of boldly weird joke.
Yeah.
And she looked so shocked. And then I was like, oh my God. And I went completely red. It was awful. And then I went to Matt LeBlanc's house and panicked because he was having a party. I don't know, but I've never, ever been to anybody that famous's house before in my life. So everyone else was going like en masse in a kind of minivan.
Yeah.
I was late because of my falling into the agent meeting.
Yep.
So I panicked and got a taxi, but I was really anxious about it. So I said, oh, listen, just drop me at the gates. And the taxi driver was like, what? And I was like, just leave me at the gates. It's fine. And basically, I in my head, that would be like the biggest faux pas. And that's not what you do. Because I just never done, you know what I mean? I was just like, well, I must just get dropped off outside and walk. And I was wearing heels at this point in this dress. And I got dropped off. But he left me there. He was so bewildered that I was being left there. And I pressed on the button and I was like, hello, it's Daisy Haggard here. And they were like, drive on in. And they opened these huge gates and I just looked up and there's just this like long hill pathway, winding trees, just like his house was so far away. So I just started walking. And I had had such a bad day with my inappropriate casting and then my tripping over that I just took off my shoes and was waving them about going, oh, of course, this is how you arrived to Matt LeBlanc's house, you know, covered in sweat, just like sort of trudging up this hill, really kind of like talking to myself like a fully mad person. And when I got to the top, Matt LeBlanc came out of his house and went, what the fuck were you doing? And I was like, what? And they'd all be watching me on the CCTV. And like, literally, like, I mean, thankfully, it was just the cast of episodes, but they were like, what? They had fully seen me just waving shoes and talking to myself. And I was confirmed as insane.
And you had been filming with him by that point.
Well, yeah, but only one series. Yeah, he didn't, you know, one season. So he didn't know me well.
And that was fun, was it? The whole experience?
That was fun. That was a fun job.
I'm glossing over very quickly. Matt LeBlanc's palace. Can we hear a tiny bit more about the Palace of LeBlanc?
It was a big palace. I mean, I went there like once for this drinks and that was it. I wasn't invited back. But it was just really big.
Yeah.
I just kept walking around and I kept saying, Hollywood. I tried to get everyone to do that because it was quite amazing.
Did he give you a tour?
He did give us a little tour, actually. He had some good cars.
Cars. So he's got how many cars?
I can't remember because I'm so not car-y. Mm-hmm. I was like, there were some cars. I can't even tell you what they were.
I mean, you don't need to know a lot about cars just to be able to count cars.
That is true. But even then, I can't count. I don't know. But I just think he had some like smart ones. I don't think it was about quantity. I think it was quality.
Right. Okay. He had a Batmobile.
Yeah, he has the Batmobile.
And screening room, presumably.
Yeah, I didn't go in there. There was a pool house, I remember. And I looked at it and I was like, that's a London house. Yeah. That's quite a big pool house.
A friend of mine was working with U2 and he went to stay at Bono's castle.
Wow.
In Ireland. Do you say Bono? Some people say Bano.
I say Bono.
You say Bono. Maybe I'm going to go with Bonio.
Just cause.
Terry, what does Terry say? Terry says, arr, arr.
Terry says, there are some children walking past. I must protect you.
Yeah. Okay.
You weak, weak woman. Terry, it's fine.
Good job, Terry. But my friend went and stayed in the guest house, which he described as being like a separate small castle. So it wasn't, it wasn't like, you know, the flat down at the end of the garden or something. It was like a small mansion with its own pool. And in the shower, there was sort of tiles that went up to head height. And then above that, there was an area of just white plaster where you were invited to write something. Because so many famous people had stayed there that, you know, like Salman Rushdie had written something funny. And Bill Clinton had written something about blowjobs. I don't know what. And, you know, like all the great and the good and maybe the not so good who had stayed there had written stuff. So my friend spent like hours trying to figure out what he was going to write. And
the
then
pressure.
I think, massive pressure.
What did he write?
What did he write? I think he did a little cartoon. That's the best thing. He's a good artist. So he just did a sort of fun, funny face.
What would you have written?
What would I have written? Good question. I would have been stuffed. I would have been stood there for about 3 hours and then written something fucking rubbish and then sort of regretted it for ages.
My husband would have probably have done a tiny little cock and balls or something.
There you go. What would you have done?
I don't know. I would have done the same as you. I'd have just panicked or just written something. Oh, I think I probably would have just written something really quick and rubbish and then gone left and then thought about it for ages.
Come on, you're under pressure. You've got to write something on Bono's shower
Daisy
wall.
Daisy was here.
Daisy was here, you're going with. Fine. Yeah. Are you going to spell that W-O-Z?
I find that too annoying, so I think I'll say was, W-A-S.
Fair enough. I'm going to write, I peed in this shower.
Oh, that's better. I'm going to write, Daisy was here. I'm glad you waited for that.
I peed in this shower and I didn't even rinse it. No,
that's really aggressive.
I'm so glad I'm not on Twitter anymore, because otherwise I'd have to be dealing with people who are so disappointed with my stance on peeing in showers. I want to point out, even though I'm not on Twitter anymore, that I don't pee in showers and I would never do that. But hypothetically, I don't see the problem.
The idea of someone else peeing in the shower and having to go into their pee shower is quite horrendous, isn't it? I also do not pee in showers.
Unless you're in there with them.
Unless. What do you mean? What do you mean?
I mean, a little extra.
Oh, are you showering in someone's wee now?
Yeah, a little extra warm jet.
Okay. I'm so glad you're not on Twitter, but I am, Adam. We've got to save me.
All right.
We're halfway through the podcast. I think it's going really great. The conversation's flowing like it would between a geezer and his mate.
All right, mate. Hello, geezer. I'm pleased to see you.
Ooh, there's so much chemistry. It's like a science lab of talking.
I'm interested in what you said.
Thank you.
There's fun chat and there's deep chat. It's like Chris Evans is meeting Stephen Hawking.
You went to Greece, right?
Yes, yes.
And you were like, what were you sort of building a house or doing up a house in Greece?
So like, well, basically, yes. So about 5 years ago, I sort of, I mean, I'm not very good at saving or being sensible at all. I mean, and I'm quite impulsive. And basically, I decided to remortgage our house and try and just sort of bought this little bit of like a very small courtyardy house but with a bit of land in Crete.
Oh wow.
Because it was my dream, and I just sort of thought, oh, you know what, I don't know, I think I'd had a conversation with somebody who had like was getting a side return and I felt a bit blue. I was like, oh, like in life we need to sort of have adventures and do the crazy thing that you want to do. And I just sort of thought, I want to make sure that I'd had this dream that my kids would be running around cobbled streets and they'd learn Greek, and it's sort of my spiritual home. So I was like, well, why don't I just try and do it and we'll figure it out. And it was very hairy and silly thing to do, really. But we bought the land and this little house with, you know, borrowed money, and then have slowly been building it up. So when I finished work in June, we decided to go there. We went there for 2 months and it was amazing.
Yeah, it's one of the most beautiful places in the world.
Isn't it?
It's strange as well because the economic situation is so dire for them, and the refugees and everything are changing life for so many people in Greece as well. It's weird. I'm sorry. I just have to make everything miserable when it's fun.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you really?
That's my job.
No, I know. I mean, I know. Yeah, I know. Greece runs so much on the tourist trade as well. I really worried about it this year.
But it's so strange to think that actually people will be discouraged from accessing those places quite so easily as we go forward for all sorts of reasons.
I know. It's impossible to know how this is going to pan out, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're trying to work out how we can drive there eventually.
In your electric car?
In our electric car.
When are they going to do teleporting? What the fuck is happening with teleport technology?
Somebody must be using this time to work on that.
What'll happen is Seth Brundle from The Fly, Jeff Goldblum's character, the real Seth Brundle, will invent teleporting technology, but it will be incredibly bad for the environment. It'll take like 3 rockets worth of fuel to actually teleport one person to Streatham.
Are you going to do it?
I don't think so. I mean, I used to want to go to space.
Not Streatham.
I've been to Streatham. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But I would love to go to space. I would love to float weightless. I would love to look down at the planet. do all the spaceman stuff, or space person stuff, I apologize.
Thank you.
But that's not going to happen. I think I would probably die if I went up to space.
Well, it depends what you were wearing.
What, something unfashionable? Oh my God.
Yeah, the aliens would be so insulted.
I'm going to die. Would you like to go to space?
Yeah, I think I'd rather go to Greece. I'd love to go to space. I would love to go to space.
Thanks.
But I'm a bit scared of space.
Of course, it's fucking scary.
All right.
You're going to die out there.
That's what, I mean, so for that reason, I'll send you to space and we'll do this from there and you can let me know what it's like. I'm a bit scared of it. I know Joe, my husband, would love to go to space, but I think I'd be a bit nervous about space.
I think that's wise to be nervous.
Just a bit scared. Can we not go? Can we just stay at home for 6 months instead? Oh.
But what are your good ways of keeping yourself calm then?
Well, I don't know what I do. I suppose I cook. I love cooking. That's
what's your go-to? What's your best dish? Daisy, what is your best dish?
I just love a roast. I love a roast. And I love being creative with what we've got and trying to sort of, you know, sort of go, what's at the bottom of the fridge? What can we save and what can we make? And
That's going to be useful.
Yeah, so that's going to be useful. And I like doing that. And I've got a little plan. I mean, although I'm basically doing lots of cooking, I think that's what I do, is think about food and meals and how to feed everybody. So yeah, I love cooking, and I never ever follow a recipe. I just make everything up and taste it a lot. So I'm, yeah, Corona terrifying right now, because I have to perfect my hygiene. But I do love I love that. I think that's probably my main thing, is sort of cooking.
Yeah. What about music?
Well, we're doing that thing. Joe's a musician, and what we've been doing as well is listening to, is it the Rolling Stone top 500 albums of all time?
Okay.
So working our way through, and that's actually been really lovely. So I feel like it's really funny. I was always really into music, and then because Joe is so musical, you know, in relationships, how sometimes you hand something over to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, he's Mr. Music. So we listen to great music all the time because of him, but I couldn't even say what it was. I'm just so spoiled. Does that make any sense? It's like he deals with music and I do the food.
And are you listening to that on Spotify?
Yeah.
Yeah, I only recently got to grips with Spotify.
I'm terrible with Spotify. I can't figure it out, but Joe makes it work on it. Yeah, it's quite complicated if you're me.
Yeah.
But it's brilliant.
I found it a little confusing. It is brilliant. And I've started making playlists. And actually, listeners, I am going to try and make a playlist to go with each of the podcasts that I put out in the next few weeks/months that maybe you might find interesting if you are a music fan and you're at home and you're social distancing and you want something to check out. You can check out some of the bullshit that I enjoy listening to, including I'm going to make an ambient playlist, right, for this episode. And it's going to be all my favorite kind of Brian Eno ambient type music that's very calming. I used to listen to it when I would have a special bath, Daisy. Do you know what I mean by a special bath?
Yeah, an indulgent bath.
There you go. A few candles, rose petals. No, not rose petals, but... certainly some Badadas.
Love Badadas.
Yeah. And if you're using Badadas, would you really make sure that there was quite a big mountain of foam in the bath before you got in? Or are you just going to let the taps take their course?
It depends. I like to go, sometimes I like to go really foamy. And other times I let the taps do their business. But I can't resist a little stir, a hand stir.
Yeah, I mean, I will get in there and I will spend 10 sweaty minutes churning the water so that the foam is going over the top of the bath before I get in. I want it to be like a pine-smelling mountain range of great, great foam.
Me and my husband quite often argue about mixing your bath stuff. So I'm quite purist. I'm like, I want to do Badadas, I'll do that. If I want to do Epsom salts, I'm going to do that. He likes to throw it all in and it gets me quite distressed. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. I don't think you should be just chucking any old...
He'll put like a rose oil in with the badadas and some Epsom salts, and I have to pretend I'm okay with it, but the truth is I'm not.
He thinks he's Heston Blumenthal in the bathroom.
Exactly.
Mate, come on, one thing at a time.
I'm like, one thing at a time. I'm like, because each thing that has to do its job, right?
Yes, also, each one of those things is already a combination of various ingredients.
Exactly. It becomes a sort of nasally confused.
Yeah. No, I think that's off. You should put your foot down.
Thank you. But I'm a very good bather. I think you're right. I was just about to say, bathing is probably a very... That's actually another way I calm down as well, is having a long bath.
Mm-hmm.
And listening to music while you're doing it. I think that's an excellent way to sort of unwind your brain.
Come round to my place tonight, we'll have a special bath. Ooh, 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 ooh. Stop smelling like a vagrant and take the fragrant path. Ooh, 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 ooh. I've got some candles, some petals, some Radox and some matey and some batter. So lower your batters into the bubbles and the water, which is slightly too hot like you, but you'll get used to it the way I had to do. With the smell from your shoes, just take it slow. When the pain from the scalding subsides, it's nice. Sit at the end where the taps are, baby, that's my advice. It's more convenient, you know. I'll take the boring end, cause I'm your special bath friend. Come round to my place tonight, we'll have a special bath. I want you looking like Jamelia, not Corey McGrath.
Oh, Daisy, I wish we were in the same room together.
I know. Can we do that at the end of this?
When the world has stopped ending, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've wanted to sit down and have a good... a podcast chat with you for a long time.
I know, me
and
too.
And one way or another, we just kept missing each other. And I had it in my diary that we were finally going to meet and sit down. And I was looking forward to it. And literally, it was that week that everything blew up. But when did I first meet you?
I can't remember when I first met, because I always feel like I always feel like I've known you since I was really young. But I don't, as in like really young, but I don't think I did. So, because Joe Cornish did magic at my brother's birthday parties.
That's right.
And so I always sort of thought that you were there, but that's just memories playing tricks. And he used to babysit us.
So this is my comedy wife, listeners, Joe Cornish, and he used to babysit you.
Yeah, he used to babysit us.
Oh my God.
I know.
How old would he have been then?
Well, I'm 41, and so I don't know how old he is now, but he just used to, he used to do like, you know, I think teenage babysitting, that kind of babysitting.
Okay. What, yeah, he was a teenager, or you were a teenager?
Well, I feel like he would have been like 18 or something, but I don't know. I can't remember. I just remember that he used to come round and occasionally babysit if they were popping out. Because right, Amanda, okay, his mum, used to tutor me.
Ah, yes, she's a teacher. And she's one of the nicest people in the world.
They're the loveliest, aren't they? They're so lovely.
So you've got Joe Cornballs Cornish babysitting you.
Yeah, got him babysitting me. So for some reason, I think that I knew you then, but I don't. Obviously didn't. So then it would have been Man Straight Woman, wouldn't it? And then yeah, it was then officially, it was
the Persuasionists.
What year was that?
What year did Michael Jackson die? Because I remember we rapped and we were all stood around in Teddington Studios in the courtyard after we had filmed the final show in front of a live audience. And Ian Lee, one of the cast, was there and he had his phone and he said, oh my God, Michael Jackson's died.
Oh my God.
And a couple of people made some off-color jokes about the fact that Michael Jackson had died. You know, there were a lot of comedians around. Jared Christmas was on the show, Simon Farnaby. And then some people were very upset that Michael Jackson had died. This was back in the days when Michael Jackson was a sort of relatively uncontroversial figure. Maybe that's not true. I don't know. So that's how I date it.
Yes, of course. I remember that, sitting outside with some warm BBC wine, getting that news.
Yes, June 2009, 25th of June 2009. So there you go. That's when we wrapped on The Persuasionists. And then the show didn't come out until January 2010.
And then it was a huge hit.
And then it was a massive hit and our lives were transformed.
Yeah.
From then on. And ever since then, we've lived in gold houses. And
we had to stay inside a lot because we were so...
We were constantly hounded.
Hounded with love and with adoration.
Yeah, exactly. So I have talked about this before. I talked to Ian Lee about it when I did a podcast with him a few years back now.
Mm.
It was quite an intense experience overall, wasn't it?
It was.
This was a sitcom for BBC Three that we did about an advertising agency. And the two pilots that we shot were called The Scum Also Rises. And then I think they made the wise decision to change that name to The Persuasionists when it came out. So it was written by an ex-advertising creative who'd done very well in the industry. I think he'd maybe been responsible for some tango campaigns and stuff like that.
Oh, had he?
Yeah. He was a decorated advertising genius. But this was his first TV show that he wrote. And I think he wanted to go for something that was halfway between a traditional studio sitcom with a live audience that was quite mainstream. But he wanted to blend it with a sort of more edgy, darker, maybe quasi Chris Morrissey sensibility and have it be a bit weird and a bit, you know, like odd jokes and strange bits of language and stuff like that. But I think I'm safe in saying the consensus was that it didn't quite work out that way.
Yes, I think that's true.
And when the show came out, it was absolutely savaged.
It was so savaged that it was pulled.
Did they pull it in the end?
Well, what they did is it was on prime time and really advertised, I think. And then it got put at like midnight.
That's right. They buried it.
I think it got moved, which is quite, that doesn't happen much. it felt a little bit, yeah, it was a strong move. It got pulled from, I think at 9 o'clock and it put on at sort of midnight or 2 in the morning or something. So yeah, it was a bit brutal, wasn't it?
It was. Do you remember, I was reminiscing with Ian Lee about it. Do you remember the morning that the reviews came out?
Yes, the message.
Yeah.
The group so hug.
Describe. Do you remember what it said?
I can't. I think you remember better because I heard you describing it recently and I giggled for ages. So you'll do it better. But it was basically group hug, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I can't remember if it was from Damon Beasley or Ian Morris.
It was
Morris.
From Damon.
Right.
I remember that.
And so Damon Beasley, one of the producers of the show, sent round this text to all the main cast. And it said, first of all, group hug.
Oh.
And then it was a very nice message about, but it sounded like a kind of damage limitation statement, you know, like
yes.
Something terrible's happened.
Yeah, it really did, didn't it? Because it was so lovely that it made everything feel even a little bit worse.
Yeah.
Like he felt so sorry for all of us. That somehow it was like the lovely, kind and thoughtful, adorable email, but somehow it was like, oh God, is it that bad?
Yeah.
It was like a really weird breakup message.
What he was saying was, I want you to know that we still stand by the show.
Yeah. We stand by you. We still stand by you.
Yeah, and we're proud of the show and we think it was good. And at this point, I hadn't read any reviews. Had you?
No, I think that's what was so funny about it. That came first and then it was like, what? Oh, God. It's
yeah.
Really bad. Oh, dear.
For a long time, my policy, whenever the subject came up, was to do this whole routine about like, yeah, I mean, it was an incredible show. It was a very special thing to be a part of. And yes, it's now regarded as one of the most important sitcoms ever made. But I guess we didn't know when we were doing it at the time. People say, you know, did you know it was going to be this amazing thing? Well, we didn't know. We did our best and we had fun, but we couldn't have possibly known what sort of impact it would have. So I do this whole thing, right? But I don't do that anymore. And my phone just didn't ring, literally, for at least 6 months or...
Oh.
It was really weird. It was like, oh, this is what it's like.
Well, it was that weird thing as well where, like, where you're in something and people just don't mention it.
Yeah.
Because they just can't. So everyone just pretends like they that hasn't happened. I still think this is a perfect time for us to do
a reunion.
A reunion. DVD, like DVD.
Yeah,
extras.
DVD commentary. I think you're right.
This is a really good time for that.
All right. Yeah,
we could watch it and talk through and see what we remembered.
That's a good idea.
What's your most significant memory from it?
Well, you know, I have to be honest and say that one of my main memories is how upset you got after a couple of the, well, after a read through that we did in front of a small audience in a club of one of the scripts. And then when we were actually shooting one of the episodes, I think it was the same episode. There was one episode where your character who was like, describe your character.
She was every adjective. She was conveniently every adjective, I would say. So she was a horrible narcissistic bitch, but then supposed to be, I can't even remember, but she was sort of whatever it suited for the scene, wasn't she? But mostly she was horrendous. But are you thinking about the big speech where I had to insult people who were not skinny?
Yes.
Yeah, and I got really upset about that because I was like, this is the most, there's no, I don't get it, and it's just offensive and horrible and I don't like it.
And yeah.
Then they told me they cut it, and then on that day we were doing the pre-records, I got handed a 3-page speech where it had been slightly rewritten, and I was told to get to do it immediately.
Yeah, and it was literally 20 minutes before we started shooting it.
20 minutes before we got shooting, I got handed a 3-page monologue. And I am not a grumpy person, particularly to work with or anything. And I turned into the camera, and everyone was hiding up in the box where they watch you when you're doing a studio audience. And I turned into the camera and went, and someone said, "Action!" And I went, "And what do you expect I'm going to do now?" Just stared down the lens and said, "What do you think is going to happen now?" Like into the camera. And I think there would have been 8 screens of me just looking like, "You've just handed me something," and I struggled to learn lines, and it's 20 minutes ago. I don't know what you think is going to happen. So we had to record it 2 line by 2 lines.
Man.
And I felt very, very vulnerable and also quite horrible because I was sort of standing up on a chair insulting people that weren't thin in a way that was really like, I didn't get it.
Yeah, the deal with your character was supposed to be that...
What was it? Can you remember more than me? I just remember she was horrible.
The thing is that now it looks just all wrong because it, you know, the cast was mainly male. You were the only significant female lead, and the character was just a total bitch. It was supposed to be cool because, you know,
she was sassy, right?
She was sassy. It was supposed the idea was that it wasn't going to be just a sort of boring, goody-goody female character. It was going to be a fun character, a character you could get your teeth into, and it would be fun to play, and people would like her because she was so awful, and I don't know. That was the idea.
Yeah, yeah.
But it didn't work out like that, and it came off as just a mean, kind of obnoxious character.
Which is fine, because characters can be. Maybe I was wrong not to just embrace that.
Oh, man, you definitely tried. I mean, you really...
I think it just didn't make much sense. So at times it just felt cruel in a way that... Because I, you've seen things I write. I'm not afraid of things being dark or people being awful. But it just felt like cruel in a way that I was like, oh, this feels cruel. Like if someone was watching it would hurt their feelings cruel. Not, and I don't like that.
It just wasn't funny enough. That was the problem. Yeah. It just didn't work in so many ways. I mean, not for want of anyone... trying. I mean, holy shit, everyone really, it was a nice group of people. That was the other thing, was I really liked hanging out with everyone.
Yeah, we had a giggle, didn't we?
It was really fun, but the only bad bits were the studio records when, you know, because it was fun hanging out and then a sense of dread and panic would grow throughout the week when we'd do rehearsals and we'd think, this isn't really working. And then sometimes it would be a case of, oh, shit, we don't really have an ending for this. And it would be literally we were actually filming and there still wasn't an ending. And the warm up guys would come out and entertain the audience a little bit. I think one of the warm up guys was Stuart Goldsmith, who now does a very successful podcast called A Comedian's Comedian. Anyway, he would come out and with his comedy partner warm up the audience while we were stood round with the director trying to figure out a way to end the actual episode.
Oh my God, that did happen, didn't it?
Yes.
Because we would get given scripts. I remember that horrendous thing, because I'm just so bad at line learning. And I remember being given the rewrites at 11 p.m. a couple of times on the Thursday night, obviously, because it was p.m. before the Friday morning where you do the pre-record and the record. And I remember that feeling, just constantly feeling like you were in that actor nightmare of just not knowing what the hell you're doing in front of so many people.
Yeah.
I remember that feeling making it very hard to feel funny because you just felt like you wanted to throw up.
It really was harsh. But when I watched a couple of them back, it was so flat and it was just... It just wasn't right.
Yeah, it wasn't right. It's a funny old thing. It's very hard shows, aren't they? It's hard to get, you know.
Yeah, the magical chemistry.
It's hard
chemistry.
To do. It's just lots of different elements. It's, yeah, it just didn't work. It didn't gel. There wasn't any yeast.
There was no gel, no antibacterial gel.
There was no antibacterial gel there at all.
Because it had run out. There'd been panic buying.
Because everyone has it.
On the comedy gel. And... there wasn't any left for us.
My local shop down the bottom of the hill that has, like, not the pound shop, but, you know, a sort of bits and bobs shop, mm-hmm. has very funny bottles on the counter. Well, not very funny because some people are spending £10 on them. It says coronavirus gel, like, kills coronavirus.
Oh, fucking hell.
£8.99. And he was like, you know, always funny you're buying, because I was desperately buying arts and crafts stuff. And he was like, oh, you're not buying this. Most people are buying this. And I was like, no, what's it got in it? Has it got any alcohol in it? What's it got in it? And he panicked and didn't respond. But it basically, they've made coronavirus gel.
Of course they fucking
it's
have.
It's probably just liquid coronavirus.
Think about the Corona Beer Company.
I know, right?
I think they're doing fine. I mean, you've got to be pretty stupid to confuse coronavirus with a bottle of beer. But... that's not to say that it isn't possible. And are you quite disciplined? Are you going to be able to do exercise and stop yourself from just getting hammered every day?
Yeah, actually, before this happened, it's my birthday coming up, and we got a sort of cheap secondhand exercise bike. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, I might get something like that because I'm struggling, you know, to sort of fit everything in the day because I was trying to only work in the school hours. So we had one, so I'm hoping that I will emerge with buns of steel, but I think I'm more likely to emerge looking exactly like Father Christmas. I really do at this rate, because I could just panic eating. I just keep walking around my house and just eating random things because I'm like, yeah. Oh, I'm not going to be on telly for ages. I'll have that, oh God, I've run out, oh God. So I have this fantasy that I'm going to have this extraordinary bum in 6 months, but I think I won't.
Daisy, your bum will always be extraordinary, if you don't mind me saying.
For all the wrong reasons.
For all the right reasons.
Thanks, babe.
Wait, this is an advert for Squarespace.
Every time I visit your website, I see success. Yes, success. The way that you look at the world makes the world want to say yes. It looks very professional. I love browsing your videos and pics, and I don't want to stop. And I'd like to access your members area and spend in your shop.
These are the kinds of comments people will say about your website if you build it with Squarespace. Just visit squarespace.com/Buxton for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, because you will want to launch, use the offer code Buxton to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
So put the smile of success on your face with Squarespace.
Continue.
Hey, welcome back, Podcats. That was Daisy Haggard. Thank you so much to her for making the time to talk to me in between writing and looking after her children. And thanks also to Daisy's husband, Joe, for his technical assistance. Cheers, Joe. In the description of this podcast, you'll find a link to Daisy's show, Back to Life, on the BBC iPlayer. Heartily recommend it. Great cast, great performances. It's funny, it's moving, it's mysterious, it's strange. It's all the words. Take a look. The description of the podcast also contains other great, great links. Link to Tim Key's late night poetry program. There's also a link to a new bit of podcast merchandise, because it turns out what you really need in this difficult time is a limited edition print in the style of an old Soviet propaganda poster of myself and Rosie in a kind of heroic agrarian workers' pose, beautifully designed and printed by Luke Drozd. Now, how do you... I always worry when I say Luke's name that I'm pronouncing it wrong. Drozd. I have checked with him in the past, and I can just never remember. Oh, it's a shame. I'm going to check online. How to pronounce Drozd. Let's see. Oh, there's a guy telling me.
Drozd.
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 Drozd. All right, good. Drozd. There we go. A cartoon man told me. I'm happy with that. Each one of the posters is signed by
Drozd
and myself, and will make a beautiful addition to your lockdown lounge. The link in the description will take you to the Backstreet International merchandise site, where you will also find other bits and pieces of podcast-related joy merch. Also in the description of this podcast this week is a link to the Spotify playlist I said I was going to make, which I have made, the first of several I hope to create for you over the coming weeks. This one is called Dr. Buckle's Lockdown Relaxorium. The icon for the playlist is a picture of Rosie that I took on a walk last summer in a verdant woodland area near here. A beautiful moment of bucolic idyll and total calm and relaxation that I thought was in keeping with the tone of the playlist I have created for you. It's over 3.5 hours of some of my favourite, mainly ambient music that I have found helpful over the years whenever I've needed to decompress or calm the F down. I used to be a very nervous flyer. I went through a phase of just suddenly being really frightened on planes, and I found that my ambient playlists were one of the only things that really helped me cope when I was feeling all claustrophobic and, you know, that midway point on a transatlantic flight when you're sat between two giant guys right at the back next to the toilets, and you're just rocking back and forth and you can't get comfortable. Yeah. Anyway, in those moments I would listen to some of the stuff on this playlist. Brian Eno. Lord of Brian Eno. Oh, Lord. I mean, he's kind of the godfather of the genre, so he's got to be represented. He's in there with him and Harold Budd, Roger Eno, Daniel Lanois. A lot of the bits of music that have come out on his EG label on various compilations. Stuff that he did with Javed on Bowie's albums, Low and Heroes. Some of those instrumental pieces. But there's also instrumental nuggets from the Beach Boys from Pet Sounds, and Ryuichi Sakamoto, movie soundtracks. Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. That's Ryuichi saying, thanks for including those. No problem, Ryuichi. And Beth Gibbons, she's on there. That's not instrumental, it's vocal. It's also some Juliana Barwick on their Poem. More recent discoveries, those. Now I'm just saying names. But look, hope you enjoy some of those if you feel like checking them out. And as I said, I hope to post more playlists in the coming weeks. Rosie, come on. We're going to head back. I've got important work to do. How are you, dog? Come say hello.
Oh, I love you.
What have you been doing? Dog look? Come on, let's head back. Rosie, that's not back. That's over there. There we go. Gonna get back to making jingles. At the moment, I'm making jingles for the beginning of each chapter in my audiobook. It's important work. It does feel weird to be doing something quite so trivial in the current climate, and knowing that there are so many people out there having their lives turned upside down, so many people working hard to help, to look after us all. But, well, people still need stupid jingles. They may not think they do, and some people will swear blind they definitely don't, but they do. Hoping the audiobook is going to be ready for the end of April. Something like that. Okay, that's it for this week. Thanks a lot to Seamus Murphy Mitchell for his production support. Thanks a lot to Matt Lamont for his edit, Wizbottery. Thanks to Acast for their continued support of this podcast. Thanks to you for downloading this. Hope you're doing okay wherever you are. Till next time we meet, which will be soon. Trying to put podcasts out as regularly as I can, a little bit more regularly than I normally would. I think the next one's going to be with brilliant writer and always intriguing interpreter of the world and human behavior, Malcolm Gladwell. That'll be sometime within the next week, I hope. Until then, stay fresh with the beat. Keep your room nice and neat. Watch what you eat. That's the word on the street. Take care. I love you. Bye!